This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Lepale politician, can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us. Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah.
Happy Friday morning, morena. This morning in the studio with me is David Paris, the man with the money from Masterton District Council. Very well, welcome, David. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us today. I've had a bit of a conversation with the community via social media around the revenue and finance policy, and I thought there was absolutely no better man for the job to explain revenue and finance, demystify all about rates than you, David. Before we get into that, David, do you mind sharing a little bit about yourself and how you came to be in local government and how long you've been here for?
The length of time is a bit daunting. 33 years I've worked for Masterton District Council. I was born in the Wairarapa, moved away and worked in various places, including the UK. Came back and was living in Auckland and decided I had a family, young family, and I wanted to bring them up in a rural setting. So I moved back to the Wairarapa in the early 1990s. I'd worked for big companies and had an opportunity to work for the council as one of the larger organisations in the Wairarapa, doing things that I know about, which is money and dealing with money. And as an accountant, trained accountant, I have learned a lot and continue to be challenged by the political environment of local government.
David, I am so excited to talk to you. One, because I'm another local government wonk and I love what local government does and represents for its community. And two, a 30-year career in local government, you had no doubt seen so much change. And then lastly, a really cool story around coming back home and coming to the Wairarapa, because we see that time and time again, right? Like our communities will go away, learn their craft or have a job, or, you know, get another job, and then there's this pull back home. There's the ability to have a great education for young families. There's the ability to buy something that you may not have been able to afford in one of our more metropolitan areas. So yeah. Welcome home. And I am lucky enough to have worked with David and then also sitting around the council table with David, and I just I always wonder how you keep everything in your brain, David. I don't think there's anything about Marston District Council you don't know.
I don't know. The brain is starting to lose a few brain cells as I age as well, so you don't retain everything that you learn, unfortunately, as you get older. It's all there in the history somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your time. I reached out to Kim and the SLT and said, who's keen for a kōrero? And we had Matt around the CBD and that particular project, and now you around demystifying revenue and finance policy. So, David, just in terms of revenue and finance policy, is it a requirement for all councils to have a policy around how they'll manage their revenue and the finances of a council?
Yes, yeah. It's part of the Local Government Act, the requirement to consult on, so the community understands how the council is going to collect the revenue it needs to pay for the services that it provides. So the council, not only does it decide on what it's going to deliver, whether it's swimming pools or parks or the things that are elective, because there's a lot of things that councils do in the regulatory space that are not elective. We have to look after the Animal Control Act and control dogs and register dogs. We have to do food premises licensing. Those are regulation things, and there's requirements that the council has to provide and funding that has to come with it. But there's things that the council does that are for the community, and the council decides we're going to provide sports grounds, we're going to provide a swimming pool. but how does the community pay for those things? Mm-hmm. And some of those things you can charge the users for, and some of those things are not charged for, and therefore the cost is rates, and rates is something that is spread across the whole community.
Mm.
And the revenue and financing policy is all about how does the community pay for things, and the way it's divided up. What are the formulas? What's equitable? Are there people who have more ability to pay than others, and therefore you structure the charging system to allow for a more money coming from some sectors than other sectors.
Mm. And I guess that kind of speaks to, you know, there has to be assumptions and principles that sit behind these things, and that those assumptions around potentially those that have more a wealth and assets of their home are those that we think have the ability to pay. And so that's a structure that Marsden District Council use. But that's quite common, isn't it, David, that structure in terms of the mechanism for deciding how the rates are struck?
Yes, yeah, the toolbox that councils have includes a value-based rate. So if your house property is worth more, then you'll pay more. Where parts of the rates are set based on the capital value of a property. That doesn't reflect the usage of the service because it's dividing up a cost across the whole community, and it's not trying to reflect that you're using some more of a service than someone else, and therefore you should pay more.
Mm.
It's just the ability to pay is higher if the capital value is higher.
And it'll be quite challenging when you think about, you know, for example, if we said, all that technology that goes with license plate numbers, and then goes, oh, there goes David Paris, he's on his way to work, we're going to charge him more because he's on that particular road. Oh, he's flushed his toilet and brushed his teeth three times more than the other person. So yes, we could try and work out who uses particular things more, but we kind of don't do that on a community level, but maybe on a commercial level we do in terms of commercial operations, but not at the home. I'm thinking about also the, I know we're getting slightly off topic, but the water meter usage, which will be on volumetrics. So there is some things that we say, actually, yep, mm-hmm. This is a direct reflection on how much water you use in your household versus a flat fee across.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And we were heading down that track, and then the water reforms came along and the council push pause on that, but there are water meters installed through the majority of Marsden at the moment, and there's still a few houses and areas to finish. But when water is charged for through the meter, it will change who's paying.
Mm.
There are high value commercial properties that are paying quite a lot of the water costs because some of our water cost is based on the capital value of their property.
Mm.
And if they're only using staff toilets and they've got a great big floor space for their stock or their shop,
mm.
their water usage will be low, and therefore their water rates will come down significantly mm. when water changes to volumetric charging.
Mm. And similarly for some of our communities that we don't provide water to, also, some of our coastal communities, for example, where we don't have a potable water source and they capture and manage their own water themselves.
Mm.
David, you did a splendid job, you and your team, around the revenue and finance policy. And I thought it was a good way to start to talk about how are services funded? And we've touched on rates as one way, and we've touched on fees and user charges. And then we've got capital, capital revenue, and then we've got borrowing. I think rates we're all familiar with, so that's what we pay, so things can be funded by rates. Fees and user charges, and back to the example of the sports fields, that's like saying, I'm going to book Queen Elizabeth Park Oval, and I'm going to pay a contribution towards that, so that's a fees and user charge, and then we'll dive into what that actually looks like a bit later. But capital revenue and borrowing, can you just talk through those two options or services to fund, like what we might use those things for?
Generally, the capital revenue is paying for a renewal of an asset. So we've got an asset and we have put money aside in funds from depreciation, which is recognising the reducing value of the asset. If we've put money aside to renew the asset, then we're spending those reserves that have been built up in the past. And good prudent financial management is that you have those monies available for when the asset is ready to be renewed. And it works much better in network assets than it does in building assets. So a building you might not do anything to in terms of renewing the roof for 30 years or 50 years, but a pipe network or a road network needs annual spend on parts of it to keep it up to date. You're not going to replace the whole thing all at once, and you've built it over many years. So bits wear out, they get replaced on an annual basis. You've got to have the funding annually to do that renewal work to maintain the whole asset in a condition where it's going to deliver the service.
David, the idea around capturing depreciation, like, I think you're right, it's absolutely prudent, and sometimes it's the first thing that goes when times get hard, or you reduce your amount of depreciation or defer depreciation charges. Do you have those conversations as part of your revenue and finance as well?
That's more of a budget conversation,
right?
Because setting the budget and setting the amount of rates funding needed in the budget is that decision point of how much depreciation goes into reserves to pay for future costs. And the temptation is let's save some money this year. We won't put the rates up. Give the ratepayers some relief. Well, it will come home to bite when the pipe wears out, or you get a fountain of water in the street because there's a pipe that's broken, and the budget's not there to fix it because we haven't put the money aside in the past.
And my observation would be that that's sometimes what local government have done in the past. In a generalisation, and I think we've been incredibly lucky by the kaitiaki and the stewardship of you and others at Marsden District Council to ensure things like Homebush, significant investments, are depreciated, and so that we have got a plan for when we are needing those intergenerational capital works project, which is probably that next topic, David, around when would we potentially get a request for a loan, or when would we need to be thinking about a larger contribution around borrowing, and at what time would we think about borrowing?
Borrowing tends to be for capital spend of new assets. So we're taking an asset and we're upgrading it. We're building more capacity. We're putting a bigger trunk main in than the one that was already there. It's because we've got growth, and the growth that we the contributions that we might get from a developer are not sufficient to pay for that growth. And often the additional reticulation or services that have been put in allowing growth in an area that is much bigger and has future focus of you know, another 20 years before that's all filled up with houses or and so the council's not going to get infrastructure contributions back from those for the 20 years, but it's still got to invest up front to put the services in. So we would borrow if we were going to expand a network and put a sewer pipe in to service a particular area of the town or expansion area. That's infrastructure. But when it comes to buildings, swimming pools, upgrading and building new, borrowing for those sort of things is a very valid form of financing, and the repayment of that debt and the interest paid on that debt into the next 30 years is the community paying for the while they're using the they're getting the benefit of the thing that's been built. So it's a it's part of a user pays for the people who have the asset available to them, as opposed to building up the funds from a whole lot of previous years and then having the money and then buying the asset. Mm. All of those people haven't had the benefit of that new asset. If you borrow, the future people using the asset are paying for it, and you're paying the borrowing back. So debt is a very valid form of funding capital.
It's a really interesting one, because I think this is the one that I found most interesting, standing for council and people's tolerance to debt, or maybe understanding for debt. And there's quite a lot of people that would say, we don't do anything until we've got the money. And I thought, shivers, that's a long time to wait for a new sewage pond if you're thinking about, you know. And I thought you explained that beautifully in terms of you get benefits now, but we pay it over. Our community at the moment get a benefit, but for example, our community for the next 25 years will get benefit from sewage, and then we've, you know, sewage ponds or water storage or whatever the investment might be. And then noting that we also have the ability for our ratepayer base to grow because we have the infrastructure to support that. So I find it's a quite an interesting one. People say, no, you don't build anything until you've got the money, which is sometimes slightly different. You know, you may take that personal approach when you're dealing with your own finances and say, right, I'm going to save up for whatever, but it's probably the equivalent of saving up for your full house instead of having the 10% deposit going, right, I'm going to save up for my $600,000 house, and wait till I've got all of that as opposed to borrowing. So I find that quite an interesting conversation too.
Yeah. And there's lots of other reasons councils can make for the investment in the town's infrastructure. And that might be the built infrastructure, it might be a town hall, but it might also be a wastewater pond or a raw water pond where we have a drought in front of us and we need to have enough water in reserve. We don't get it out of the river because the river's nearly dry.
Yes.
We've got a whole lot of storage to keep the water coming into town, and you know, we still might have water restrictions and you can't water your garden or every second day, whatever. But there is still water. So resilience of those systems and increasing that resilience is an investment, and we would borrow for that investment.
And David, then we look at in the presentation from you and your team was sort of who pays. So there's user pays. So that's, for example, I front up and go to the swimming pool. I pay to go to the swimming pool, even though I've probably paid or have paid through my rates and other sources as well. And then we've got property owners, and then we've got different property categories and the wider community. And that's kind of the workshop that elected members have around, you know, how much of these things are everybody's costs and how much of these are user pays costs, and what is the tolerance, because every time you would move something there would be an impact. So for example, you know, price sensitivity, if we said actually for the swimming pool user charges we're not going to fund by rates, it's 100% user charges, it might be $45 per person for a swim, and we know that that's not palatable. So that's those conversations we've had around who pays. So David, just thinking about user pays, property ownership, different property categories, and the wider community, would just touch on those things for us.
Yeah, the revenue and financing policy requires the council to go through every activity that it delivers and look at who's using the service. And whether they have an ability to pay for the service, whether the council has the ability to identify who's using it and to charge for it, and then whether the full charge is valid or not. And as you say, the full charge on the swimming pool is going to reduce the access for a large percentage of the community who won't be able to afford $45 a swim. So the council then looks at what's a reasonable charge and is going to compromise the split between how much, what percentage of the costs are going to be recovered by the user pays and what percentage is going to come from rates across the community, which is effectively a subsidy to the swimmers. And if that's currently I think it's around 15 or 20% is what the income from the rec centre is covering in terms of the total costs of the facility. And it might be a subsidy to swimmers if you identify per swim, but the facility in the town and what that does for the whole community in terms of making the town attractive to live in, and whether you use it or not, attracting more people to come and live here, and therefore more work, more jobs, more money spent. Mm. There's a wider economic argument for a subsidy for certain community facilities in the town than just saying everything should be user pays and I'm not using it, I'm not paying for it. Mm. That's not the a revenue and financing policy allows the council to make decisions that says we're not going down the track of full user pays because of these factors, and they take into account that economic benefit of what's provided. Sports clubs, for example, the whole health benefits of people doing physical activity. Mm. You make the use of a soccer field too expensive, people won't play the sport. Mm. At the moment, it's an affordable thing to do, and the cost in someone's rates is a very small proportion, but everybody's rates is paying for the council to maintain sports fields.
It's probably that crossover too, though, I think, around, you know, who's responsible for what and how is that charged? Because I think about sports field and with my day job hat on and round Nuku Water, we know for every dollar we invest in sport and recreation, there's a community wellbeing outcome, whether that's a health outcome, mental health or physical health and wellbeing, a return of, you know, $2.50 around about from putting that in. And you know, government don't necessarily provide the sports fields, but community do. But we knock on effect, hopefully that means less people will be going to our hospital and we will live longer and be happy, healthy members of our community. So it's quite an interesting one. And you're right, because it's exactly the same as other things that the government provides, because that's what the community needs. For example, policing. I don't think there'd be a model that would stand up policing in a corporate user pays, everything would, you know, charge, but it's something that a society needs. And interesting, I've had quite a bit of feedback recently with in regards to Aotearoa and the challenges that they have, but having places like Aotearoa that look after our rich history and make Masterton and the Wairarapa, you know, add to the vibrancy and the art scene for those things is really important. And I think you're right around the swimming pool. And I think about our previous, you know, town planners, et cetera, and the beautiful Queen Elizabeth Park. Like, if we made decisions that were purely financial, we wouldn't have the most amazing facility, which is a destination in itself that is walking distance to, you know, our CBD and the beautiful Queen Elizabeth Park that it is. So, Toe talk all your comments.
Yeah. But the coming back to the policy and the consultation with the community, those decisions that are tasked with elected members, the elected members are going to the community and saying, this is how we do it at the moment, as far as dividing up the costs of what the services are. Is this right? Do you think we should change it? Do you think someone's not paying enough? Are you paying too much? Everybody thinks they're paying too much in rates. But there is a methodology behind the way it's divided up. And if you look to change that methodology, the changes need to be based on good logic and good reasoning and justification, because it's a balloon. You push it in one side, reduce someone's rates, someone else is going to pay more. And so it's hard to make wholesale changes and simply based on whether it's principle-based or not, whatever those changes are. People won't like it if they're paying more. Mm. So the information and understanding that we try and put across when we consult on the revenue and financing policy is important, that people understand why we're doing things and why something might be changing, the logic behind those changes. Mm-hmm. I know roading's a big a big topic. And when the waters come out of the rates next year, so people's rates bills from July next year won't include water, wastewater and stormwater costs, and you'll see around 30% reduction for urban Masterton properties. And what's left in there is roading as 30 to 40% of the total rates bill. And the cost of providing and maintaining local roads, so not the state highway but every other road, the council is doing that. And the council receives some subsidy from the government at currently 56% of the costs of that subsidised work. And the balance is funded out of rates. And as you say, one day there'll be a camera everywhere that clocks how many kilometres your car has travelled and sends you a bill for that. At the moment, that technology is not in use, and therefore everyone has access to every road in the district, and we are spreading the costs of those roads as equitably as possible. But we have policies that identify areas where those roading costs are more than others. Mm. Rural, for example, where we divide between urban and rural, the rural spend on rural roads is 70% of the council's budget. And so the council's policy is that 70% of the roading spend is going to be funded by rural properties. And that's all rural properties. It's farms, it's forestry, it's beach properties at Riversdale and Castle Point, it's lifestyle blocks, it's vineyards. So it's simply an urban-rural division, and the bucket of money that needs to come from rural is divided up. Those roading costs are significant, but the rural properties, majority of their rates are the roading costs.
Yeah.
They're not paying much for swimming pools and libraries. Mm. So trying to be equitable in access to services, but also targeting where if those services are delivered in rural, then rural should be paying.
Mm. And that's the challenging one for small rural communities, right? Like when we receive updates around looking at our network and the need of our network, and 70% being external of our urban area, it's such a sparse amount of network to even look after. And then if you think about our neighbours, which are similar with a smaller rating base, it is a challenge. And then how much contribution we get to the government. And just to touch on things, and that sit within state highways, David just touched on before, that sits with the government, so they look after those things. But all of the other routes, the councils are required to. And when you think about 40% of our operation being roading, it's a lot.
Mm.
It's a lot.
And climate change, storms are a real factor at the moment. We set budgets for maintaining the roads that we have, and those budgets are under pressure because there's inflationary increases because of fuel price changes. But then a storm comes along, and we can get millions of dollars worth of damage from rain events, and we've had four rain events in the last 8 months.
Mm.
The council being able to fund and pay for that and keep the roads maintained is a constant challenge.
Mm.
It is,
David, and given that it's such a large amount, those money is not insignificant. You know, every time you talk, you're not talking 20,000 or 30,000 or 100,000. You're talking 500,000, which is significant impact, sort of 1% plus on rates, which is really challenging and can be quite confronting. And so I think that the weather and how we manage those events, and then I think the advocacy to say, and I know it's not politically palatable, and I appreciate the government is in a similar situation to local government, that they've got differing priorities. But how do you support your communities when weather events come along, when the rating mechanism or the mechanism that local government currently has is not cutting it and will not cut it for the future? And slightly being political, when you think about rate capping, for example, but we know through briefings that our bitumen costs and our fuel costs are at about an 8% increase, not a 4% where the rates capping is looking. And if you're saying that 40% is at that 8% of what you're doing, like that's a tough ask of any council. So it kind of feels like you've been asked to do things with your hands tied behind your back.
And it goes across more than just roading. The solid waste contract, there's trucks on the road collecting rubbish and recycling. They're taking that rubbish to Bonnie Glen. The fuel price is a significant portion of those costs, and the people doing that work are looking for the extra money to pay for those that extra cost in the fuel price. And the council sets rates at the beginning of the year, and there's only so many dollars, and to absorb the increases is difficult. So we're balancing things as much as we can. There is a degree of user pays in solid waste, because we can charge people if they take rubbish through the gate to the transfer station. If we need to, we can put the price up there and recover some of it via user pays. But those cost pressures are difficult, and passing them on to the community, to users, is a difficult choice, but the council as an organisation has to be prudent, and it's only got so much money in reserves and can't draw on those reserves for the rainy day, because the rainy days keep coming.
Two things. The alarm clock's already gone off to tell us we are about to hit time, David. What was I? Oh, gosh, now I've lost my train of thought. In terms of rate increases, I work full-time, and so when rates go up, I can manage accordingly, and so I take out some of those things that might have been more luxury items, and I have the ability to pay. And I think the increases, when we're talking about 5% or 4%, for me personally, are palatable, because I look at the increases that we're seeing across the board of everything else. So if you think about your food, if you think about fuel, our prices in those areas have gone up. So I think actually there's probably some prudency that sits within them. The hardest bit is that when you're talking about $4,000+ or whatever your rates are, that's a larger amount versus when you go to the supermarket and what you bought for $50, you're now paying $100 for. So I think there's some relativity. And lastly, David, well, I'm going to ask you if you'd like to come back, because I think we've just zoomed through some stuff. But with all your time in local government, if there's one thing that you could change, what would it be? Should have prepped you, shouldn't I, David?
I should have been able to think about that one.
You can come back and answer it another time.
I think so. There certainly has been a lot of change, and the level of professionalism in local government is much greater, but there's also a lot more scrutiny than in the 90s when I first came in, and we were still very much post-amalgamation of county and borough and cash accounting, and trying to be more professional and doing things on a more corporate basis than a ad hoc local government basis. So the professionalism of the organisation is progressed considerably over the years, but so has the government regulation and requirements from government for councils to perform and deliver within their communities. So just the ramping up of everything, it just feels like we're busier and busier from requirements. And the scrutiny from the public, not necessarily the local but across the country, the requirements for information requests They're called LGOIMAs, the Local Government Official Information and Meetings Act. The number of those that are coming in and tying up council and staff time on very unproductive work, because all you're doing is answering someone's question and researching for them the answer. Those are the sort of things that, I don't know if I can change it, but it's a frustration when I see how efficient or not efficient councils might be, the inefficiencies in having to respond to information requests is an area where I see something could change.
Yeah, it's good feedback, and I think that we had also touched on, you know, AI hasn't necessarily helped, because people become experts and put things through ChatGPT and then produce a 12-page thing to say, can you please give me this feedback, which might take a week of somebody's time, or, you know, might be less as well. And I acknowledge the community does reserve the right to ask questions of us, but it needs to be reasonable. And I think when it comes with a significant opportunity cost in terms of staff time, I'd far prefer our staff to be focusing on wider impacts for our community and everyone, rather than responding to one person's significant complaint about a particular thing. Yeah. And I know that we've had that discussion around the charging, but I think LGOIMAs, you're right, are something that ramp up. My other observation is that for small councils, to your point around requirements of government or of communities and our expectations, smaller councils are still required to meet the same Local Government Act as the Wellington City Councils or the Auckland, just with less staff and less resourcing. And I think we can often give our staff a hard time, and we can often talk about personnel costs, but that does come with that growing requirement of local government to deliver to a certain standard on a certain things that are being forced down by government or others, whether it's a health and safety legislation or anything else as well, or you know, potable water requirements or etc. Yeah. So I completely agree.
Commission is the latest one, regulating water entities, and the council is currently a water entity until July next year, so we're now paying the Commerce Commission to regulate us.
And the same with all of that, you know, coming in halfway through us election cycle and looking at the most significant reform for local government at the moment, but still being asked to do things like audit, long-term plan, you know, your revenue and finance policies, consultation with your community, when we don't know what our community might look like. It might be a Wairarapa community, it might be a Masterton community, it might be a Greater Wellington community. So there's all of the stuff that adds to the workload of staff, which I wish we could go back to the basics. But anyway, it's not my decision to make. And now I'm just moaning, David. We've gone over time. But, David, I want to say thank you very much. Like, I really appreciate you coming in and having a talk and demystifying revenue and finance. And I just want to say I really appreciate your knowledge and your skill and expertise that you bring to the table. And I, for those of you that don't know David particularly well, I don't think you could get a more honest man. And he answers the questions to the best of his ability. And it's the answer that is his answer and the right answer. And he's happy to speak to those things. And I met David for the first time when I worked at the recreation centre, when him and his dad came in were helping set up for the Golden Shears many moons ago. Yeah. So you're also a very strong community man, involved in a lot of things around town. So thank you from me to you for coming in, but thank you for your mahi at the council. I think having 33 years service to the council and all of that institutional knowledge, we are the better for. And thank you for also your wider work within our community, David. Much appreciated. And I'll get you back in.
Okay. No worries, okay.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Ka kite.
Pale, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision?